Hello, everybody! You heard me call my dog Stinky Faced just now. That's because she is. And welcome to this week's episode of Grim Scenarios. The number one, I think I'm fair to say, Blood on the Clock Tower strategy podcast. And one of several Blood on the Clock Tower tier-making podcasts. At this
Milk.
point,
Oh, sorry. I thought we were doing what we did last time.
I don't know what we did last time. Do you think I remember that far back, Milk? Anyway, we said we were going to come back with a normal episode, but we talked about it earlier today, and we decided we weren't in the mood for a normal episode, so we're going to rank some outsiders today. Isn't that right, Milk?
That's right, Emma. We're gonna rank probably about half of the outsiders today. We'll see how quickly it goes. The minions took longer than we thought, so we're expecting the outsiders to take longer than we thought as well.
Yeah, we originally thought maybe the outsiders would go a little quicker, but then we remembered for good characters, we also have to talk about their strategy from the aspect of bluffing them as well, because that's part of the strategic value of a character. Anyway, we'll get to that in about 2 to 3 minutes, I think, because first we wanted to do something else. On top of that, which is to say, we have a badge to Final 3 Con in April 2025. These are sold out, it's impossible to get badges. Unless you go through the transfer system or you win a giveaway. And we have one for you through the Grim Scenarios podcast here. And Milk, we've been talking a lot, you and I, and actually the community at large, about playing kind, playing positive. And I think we had a pretty fun idea for what to do with this giveaway. Sort of, we want to promote sort of the positive aspects of Blood on the Clock Tower. So, Milk, what are we doing?
I think it's also like core to like what you and I have kind of established Grim Scenarios to be about as well. And that's our sort of core rule, which is be kind to each other in your play and be kind to each other, socially and just in the world. Like there's just not enough kindness in the world. So what we would
Also, it's
love,
a
oh yeah.
literal rule of Blood on the Clock Tower is be
It
kind.
is. Be
It's in the
kind.
rule. It's in the rule sheet that's supposed to be read anytime a new player is playing. And I think, frankly, that rule you can read also with veteran players.
I think it's really important to remind people that we come to this space as friends. We come to this space from all sorts of different places in our lives, all sorts of different things going on. And it's always important to make kindness our first priority because without that, this is a game of lying and deception. This is a game that we are coming to with friends or strangers or, players who have played lots before, players who have never played before. And in that company, the best way to make sure that everybody has a good time is, of course, to just be kind. So, with that in mind, what we'd like to ask from you is if you'd like a chance to win a badge to Clock Tower, sorry, a Final 3 Con in Washington, D.C., in April of 2025. What we'd like from you is to email grimscenariospodcast@gmail.com with a brief story about a time in a game of Blood on the Clock Tower when someone was kind to you, when someone treated you with kindness.
And also, when you're emailing us, just for convenience sake, if you could email us the email, if you're not sending it from the same email, email us the email you use on tabletop.events. If you don't have a tabletop.events account, you should make one, and that will facilitate us transferring the badge to you.
And maybe include your Discord username as well,
Yeah, all the
just to
ways that we
facilitate
would
easy
want to get
communication.
in touch with you easily to facilitate a badge transfer.
Yeah, that seems.
Because we're ultimately going to need the email address to add you as a friend on Tabletop Events so we can transfer a ticket to you.
That's right.
But Discord to confirm that you are who you are, your email address that you use for Tabletop Events, if it's not the email you're sending it from, and then look out for our friend request if you win the giveaway. And you can have to submit your stories. Let's see. This episode should be coming out on November 1st if everything goes well. So why don't we say until December 6th in case this comes out on November 8th instead?
That sounds fair
So
to me.
when the clock turns December 6th in Eastern Time, United States, this giveaway will be closed. All the entries will need to be collected. So Yeah, midnight, at the stroke of midnight, turning into December 6th in the Eastern United States, which is GMT minus 5, I think. I don't really know how time works.
It's not important. You know, get it to us by then. You can figure it out. Send it to us by December 4th. Then you definitely know it's not a problem.
Exactly. And that's my birthday.
So, hey, that's great.
Also, I will deny it's my birthday if anyone named Ryback insists we have the same birthday.
Huh. I'm not going to dig too deep into that, I think. That sounds complicated. All right, so story about a time that someone was kind to you. GrimScenariosPodcast@gmail.com. Your
by the stroke of midnight.
Yep.
Turning the day to December 6th on your calendar if you live in the Eastern United States, which is GMT minus 5, I think. So 5 a.m. in Britain, 9 p.m. in the Western United States on the 5th. All right, let's get to ranking some outsiders.
Yeah. Well, I read off the names of the roles last time. Do you want to read the names of the roles this time?
Sure. These are the outsiders that currently exist in Blood on the Clock Tower. Barber.
The Butler. Barber.
Drunk. Damsel. Golem. Goon. Hatter. Heretic. Klutz. Lunatic. Moonchild. Mutant. Ogre. Plague Doctor. Politician. Puzzle Master. Recluse. Saint. Snitch. Sweetheart. Tinker. Zealot.
I think there's going to be some really interesting conversations to have in this. Like, I'm looking forward to these as a point of conversation.
Right, so the first one we have is, of course, the barber. Let's just jump into these conversations. Milk, tell me what you think about barber strategy from the barber's perspective, or from an evil player's perspective, bluffing barber.
I find barber fascinating because I think there's a misnomer that the barber should out themselves immediately and get themselves killed. I see this more and more in games, right? Oh, the swap is going to be less useful to the evil team on night 2 than it is going to be to the evil team on night 4. And maybe that's true to an extent, but there's a whole lot of reasons why you might not want to do that. It immediately lets the demon and minions move around, first of all, and so it nullifies information from early in the game. It also allows the evil team to just swap the barber back into play, nullifying a townsfolk role at the cost of confirming a good player, theoretically. So, you know, especially on its home script of SNV, I'm not sure getting the barber killed right away is such a strong choice.
Yeah.
It definitely wants to hide, like all SNV outsiders, though.
Yeah. Certainly within the context of the script of SNV, all outsiders are sort of a little magnified in their strategy because they all have to consider the possibility they might at any point become evil.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of element of SNV in particular, and of course any custom script with a Fangu for any outsider, but the SNV outsiders have that sort of natural interaction. I don't know how much I think it makes sense to focus on that interaction, because I don't think that's specific to the outsider token. It's an element of the Fangu demon, even though it's native for like the 4 SNV outsiders.
I think it's worth kind of mentioning, but we can get to those Fangu interactions when we get to Fangu.
I think for the barber, you want to die, I think, at a time when the demon's not going to be quite sure what to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think
one way to do that is to simply hide. And then when you get killed, the demon suddenly has a barber swap and they're like, yeah, you know, that's when I find the barber swap to be the least useful as a demon, right? Like, you didn't expect it. You didn't kind of know it was coming. And then all of a sudden you have it and you're like, yeah, I don't know that there's that much useful to do with it here. It's day 2 or 3. You're established in your bluff as the demon. You know, your minions are maybe a little bit suspicious out there. On SNV, maybe there's, you know, town crier information out there that you're not sure how to navigate yet. So yeah. I think Emma's exactly right with that. The barber kind of just wants to hide, and when they die. And, you know, maybe when you're starting to get into, like, Final 5 or Final 3, that can be a little tricky to navigate, too. But yeah, it's pretty sweet to be a barber in Final 3.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, like, the ideal time for you to die is, of course, if all the minions are already dead, right? Mm-hmm. Because at that point, the demon either doesn't get to use the swap because there's no one for them to swap to, or they can swap you in for a good player, which confirms a good player, and just turns you into a farmer or a plain token.
Yeah.
Now, as a good player, how do you know when all the minions are dead? It's tricky.
Yeah, you don't.
But you don't. But like that sort of, I think, creates sort of like the, like that makes the barber a little more interesting. Is, you know, if you die night one, or day one, the demon can always just, like, they can take the hit of the early confirmation on one other player and then save you for when they figure out what they need to do with you by swapping you with one other good player, and then they have a living barber that they can use at their leisure. So I agree with Milk that, like, the die immediately strategy of as a barber is a little overstated. I think, really, the barber, like, should be trying to die at a point where they think it won't help evil, which is going to be different from game to game. Obviously, the best situation is for the barber to die when all minions are already dead.
Yeah.
What do you think about bluffing as the barber, Milk?
I think most of the SNV outsiders make interesting bluffs because in the current meta of sort of wanting to kill off a barber, or people wanting to kill off barbers and klutzes very early, I don't know how useful they are as bluffs, but I do think they can live for a while. And I think it's great for a minion on SNV to have an outsider bluff because it can make them look like they were Fangu jumped late in the game. So from that perspective, you know, I think there's interesting things that can happen. You can even fake it if your pit hag is still alive, or if you're a vigor killed pit hag, like you can fake, like, yeah, you know, things like that. I think it's, you can get a little cute with it.
If you're a vigor killed pit hag who wants to bluff barber, you can hit hag a good player into the barber the night you're expecting your vigor mortis to kill you, if you've coordinated with your vigor mortis.
Yeah.
And it'll make you look like the barber who just died and not the vigor killed pit hag.
Yeah. I think there's some interesting stuff you can do with it for sure.
I wasn't actually quite sure where I was going to plan to rank barber, but I think this conversation has sort of moved me to put it in A tier on my end.
I agree. I think it's an A tier outsider. I think the bluffing space is interesting. I think if you can convince people that it's not optimal to just kill you early, or if you can hide being the barber and then come out with it as it on like day three, you know, we didn't talk about it a ton in minions, but like there's some value in minions just getting killed to spend a kill from the town. Like if, you know, a minion getting killed that doesn't look like the demon is better in some ways than like killing off suspicious townsfolk. So I think that like having barber as a bluff and sort of being like, oh, I think I should probably die now, it can be kind of
yeah, like we talked about that a little with the evil twin, with like the idea that the part of the evil twin's power is it forces an execution in the late game on a non-demon candidate, which means like multiple demon candidates can still be alive. So like if you can find an excuse for to make yourself both not a demon candidate and someone who needs to be executed as a minion, it's really interesting. Anyway, we're gonna move on to, of course, the butler. Now a lot of people don't like playing as the butler. It constantly gets besmirched in like community polls on like Reddit. It's particularly where these community polls happen. People attack it. People say, why is it on TB? It doesn't do anything. What can I replace it with? I'll never put it in a game. I'm obviously not one of these people. It's notoriously my favorite character in Thunder of the Clock Tower. And I'm unsurprisingly going to make the case that the butler goes all the way up in S tier. In fact, I think the butler is the outsider that teaches outsiders to think about how to use their ability strategically to benefit their team. I adore it for that reason. I think it's the strategic S-tier outsider par excellence. I think there's some that are more strategically interesting, but I do think Butler is the first strategically interesting outsider that players meet. It's the one whose job is to teach you about how to use your outside, your disadvantage to your advantage. And let me tell you a little bit about how that works.
I just want to cut in real quick, Emma. And just say that I just so that nobody thinks I'm going to come back and like shoot all this down. I fully agree with you on this. And I think it's important for us to remember that there are, I think it's important for us to focus on the thought that there are characters and to some extent, the base three scripts as a whole are there to teach players how to play the game. They're structured in ways that help players learn how to play the game. And I think you're spot on 100% that the butler is there to teach you how to turn your disadvantage into an advantage as an outsider. No questions.
So butler is, of course, an outsider that makes choices, which is very rare. There's a total of, looking at this quickly, five outsiders, whose ability requires them to make seven. Sorry, I kept noticing more as I counted this. So Butler, Golem, Klutz, Lunatic, Moonchild, Ogre, and Puzzle Master have to make an active choice with their ability. Butler is the first one of those you meet. The Butler, of course, has to choose who they want to restrict their vote to. And once they've made that choice, like, they can learn... at first, that can seem pretty, like, unfun. Like, and some players have, like, real trouble remembering that they're not supposed to vote when they're not supposed to vote, because it's so unnatural to them. But if the butler, like, starts paying attention to who lets them vote and on who, like, you can gain social information about the game. But before we even get to that, like, you can use your pick as, like, more basic strategy of, it's easier for me as a butler if I pick the person right next to me. It's more likely I'll be able to say, hey, can we vote on this? Or know if I can vote at my turn to vote if I pick the person next to me than if I pick the person across the room. Obviously in the direction that, you know, they're counterclockwise from you, not your clockwise neighbor. Your counterclockwise neighbor is the one that lets you make that basic strategy realization. But I think the true strategic depth of the butler comes from the ability to drive social information about it. Anyway, I've waxed on enough about the butler. Perfect character, 10 out of 10, S tier strategy. Milk, anything you want to add?
I'm putting in an S tier and moving on. It's a really, really fun outsider. It's an active choice outsider. It allows you to create lots of bluffing space. It limits you only in the sense that you're saying that you're only going to vote when one person votes. But honestly, some people don't even track that. You can get away with quite a lot.
And if you... And just one more thing on it as a bluff. If you want an excuse not to vote on your demon as the poisoner, you can bluff Butler. And, oh no, my master didn't vote. I couldn't vote on my demon. To let your demon get the opportunity to star pass.
Yep.
Perfect bluff.
It's a great bluff.
Anyway, I mostly talked about the butler, so for this next character, which is the drunk, we'll let Milk do most of the talking.
You've gotten your alphabet out of order again, Emma.
The damsel is next.
I think damsel is going to join the butler and the barber up there near the top, to be honest, because it fundamentally changes the strategy of how everyone in a game of Blood on the Clock Tower has to play. It can do this in a whole bunch of different ways. It encourages good players to claim to be the damsel when they are not. It encourages minions to go hunting for a damsel. It provides an alternate win condition for minions. But beyond all of the things that it just does, like, mechanically by existing, it changes how information gets shared. It creates these interesting little trust games that you have to play with other players where you have to decide, am I going to give this person my actual role? If a damsel can get trusted and find the huntsman, it's often extremely powerful, especially in large player count games where the damsel might just get a demon bluff as their replacement role. So I think there's a ton of strategy involved in the damsel. I think there's a lot of ways you can play it. I think there's a lot of interesting things you can do with it as the damsel. And then it just creates free bluffs for evil, which is always interesting and fun. Someone is always going to claim damsel in a game where damsel is on the script. And I think that immediately gives it a lot of strategic interest. Emma?
Yeah, I would agree. The damsel sort of warps everyone's strategy in some ways. Like, I'm beseeching townsfolk on damsel scripts to do stuff that makes them plausible as damsel candidates.
Yeah,
for and sure. Not just come out and like give perfectly accurate information that they get every night with a hard claim. Like, be a little cagier when there's a damsel around. Make it hard for the evil team to like collect everyone's information, compare notes, and say, all right, this person has a clean bluff and good information. This person has a clean bluff and good information. This person has a clean bluff and good information. This person doesn't know what's going on and gave out false information. None of us poisoned them. This person has a clean bluff and good information. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, it's the one player who has bad information that the evil team knows is bad and knows they're not responsible for. That's probably the damsel.
The way to fake damsel isn't to, on day two, when you wake up, say, haha, I was the damsel. I was the day one execution or the night two kill, and I'm the damsel. Evil's probably not going to believe that, and you're just not sharing information with the town that you potentially have. The way to do it is to have slightly wrong information. Just disrupt your own information slightly in ways that you think won't be too problematic for the town, but in ways that make the evil team consider you a potential damsel candidate.
Bounce around in claims for a bit the first 2 days if there's a damsel on script before you settle into your actual role. Like, that's a pretty decent option, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's
damsel also gets like strategic depth with certain script combinations. Like, it has to do different things on a script with like a barber, for example, as the most notable example, or a cannibal than it can on a script with out characters like that. And of course, the damsel has that choice between like trying to get killed early for the safety versus trying to find and hook up with the huntsman for the big reward, which I think is also a super interesting choice. Like, strategic choice an outsider has to make. Full agreement that this belongs in S tier.
Yeah. Damsel's S tier. It completely
Let's move on to the drunk.
Yep, drunk time.
I'd say about the drunk, as I want to say, is I love the drunk as a character. If this was a ranking of how much do I love characters, I think drunk is going to be higher than I'm about to argue for it being.
Yeah.
Solving that you're the drunk is, like, a really important part of the TB learning curve.
And yet,
I sort of think drunk is just sort of mid-tier in terms of strategy. I think it's going to be our first B-tier character on my side.
I actually agree with that as well.
Like, because the drunk comes with a built-in bluff always, like, there's very little, like, drunk-specific bluffing that you need to do. In a lesser way than the damsel, but in still a way, it sort of warps every game of Trouble Brewing by forcing good players to consider the world where they might be the drunk.
I think it's a great disruptor in terms of what it does, but strategically, it can help the evil team, because the evil team is likely to be able to find the drunk more easily than the good team. So strategically, it can be useful from an evil perspective in terms of what evil can do, you know, to use the fact that player is drunk and to support a drunk world or to, you know, frame that player. But as the drunk itself, you know, it's the most Blood on the Clock Tower outsider in many ways, because it makes you doubt the veracity of your own information. It gives you a reason to think your information might be wrong without anyone else interfering with you. There's just not a whole lot of strategy that comes around it or related to it.
I do think drunk is underrated as a strategically interesting bluff for the evil team.
For sure.
I think evil does not bluff that they're the drunk enough.
I think that's what gets it into B tier, to be honest. Like, the bluffing potential for evils to use it as a bluff in the same way that they can either fall back into something like Pixie, right, and just fall back into drunk, like, oh, that's weird, my information was wrong, I must be the drunk. the way that on TB they can use it in strategic ways with the Baron, or knowing that the Baron is or is not in play to create, you know, potential bluffs for the evil team, or to create, you know, drunk worlds when there isn't a drunken play, or to create non-drunk worlds when there is a drunken play. I think that's all very interesting, but from the perspective of actually sort of being the drunk, there's not a lot of strategy.
Yeah. But it does have more strategy, I think, than our next contender, the Golem. I think Golem goes down in the D tier. Golem's strategy is punch. Punch early.
Punch.
Punch. I think the most strategically debatable question around the Golem is, after they've punched someone, should you kill the Golem? And I actually take the controversial position that you should never execute a Golem. I mean, you should only in situations where there's ways for the Golem to become the demon through Fangu or Summoner.
I was going to suggest that as a reason to kill a Golem. But I kind of also agree. Go ahead, Emma. This is your point.
Like, people were like, oh no, if the Golem's alive in Final 3, they won't be to nominate, and there could be two evils and a Golem alive. Well, yeah, that's true. So does that mean on Final 5, you should execute the Golem? No, it means you should execute your leading demon candidate on Final 5. Because at that stage, like, if there's three evils alive and you execute the Golem, I hate to break it to you, you've already lost the game.
Yeah.
If you execute a good player who's not the Golem, you've lost the game. If you execute an evil player who's not the demon at that point, you've lost the game. Like,
executing the Golem is the most likely of those things to lose you the game that you know.
The Golem is, like, all these other things are, like, anyone who's not the demon at that stage, if it's good player, Golem, three evils alive, loses you the game if you're good. But executing the Golem is the one that you know loses you the game with the all-evil Final 3. And if it's, like, two evils, three goods, like, you can execute on 5, and though if you hit an evil, you don't have to worry about the Golem, because there'll be another good alive. If it's an even player count game where it goes where you have a Final 4, and you're like, well, we can't have the Golem, like, then you just execute the demon on Final 4 instead of, like, wasting execution earlier on the Golem. All you accomplish by executing the Golem is subtracting the number of good, confirmed good votes you have by 1. So that's my main goal of the strategy point. It's not really about the Golem, it's about the rest of the good team. Stop killing your Golems. Like, they're fine. They're just alive. Just remember what that does to when is your execution that you need to hit or to win the game is, because it's earlier than you think it is. But executing the Golem doesn't change that. You're still -1 execution when you execute the Golem, because you used an execution on the Golem instead of a demon candidate, but now you're also -1 vote the rest of the game.
Yeah. The strategy of Golem itself is get a social read on somebody day 1, use your ability, nominate.
Yeah, just punch someone day 1.
Yeah, you can punch day 2 if you really want to, but just punch somebody on the first day or two. There's no reason to try to sit on it till late game.
Bluffing Golem, obviously, extremely difficult. Like,
Harpy helps, I guess.
Harpy and Yagababble can theoretically make it an option with what's released. I don't know if it makes it a good option. You can obviously bluff that you've actually found the demon, but the problem is then the demon gets executed and now you're just sitting here as the Golem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. It's going in D tier, where it belongs. And I think that's, there's not much more to say about it, really.
Next up is the Goon, Milk. What do you have to say about the Goon?
Goon's strategy is going to come in 2 flavors. It's going to come in on BMR flavor, and it's going to come in on other scripts flavor. So we're going to have to talk about it in 2 different ways. Goon is a minion an outsider that shows up on a lot of scripts. It's just a very popular one. It has alignment flipping, which a lot of people like the mechanic of alignment flipping, which, you know, it's an interesting mechanic, so it's good. But on BMR specifically, I think Goon is a little bit limited in what its strategy wants to be. You need to learn about what's going on with the roles of other people. Other people's roles are really important to you as the goon, because you need to figure out how much ability there is to change your alignment either to evil or back from evil. And you're sort of living in this interesting space of trying to decide which team is winning and trying to actively find ways of switching sides to the team that's winning if that's possible. And if it's not possible, you know, part of the problem with Goon, I think, is that the agency to choose which side you're on is somewhat limited. And so that would be my kind of knock against Goon from a strategic perspective, is you can mess up a lot of information early in the game when you've been turned evil, then get turned good in the mid to late game and have really spiked the game for your own team. And that can feel pretty bad. So I think having to toe the line is what makes the goon strategically interesting, but it's also very limiting. What about you, Emma?
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. And like most BMR characters, I think the goon shows up on too many custom scripts. I think it's really needs a lot of that BMR ecosystem to... Why did I say ecosystem? I know how words are pronounced. Ecosystem to, like, work out the way it's sort of supposed to.
Yeah.
The goon, I think, does have choices. I think the goon, like, especially on BMR, where if a goon wants to play for good, they have to be worried about the threat of a Godfather kill. And if they want to play for evil, they want to hope for the threat of a Godfather kill. Both as, like, a reason not to execute them and as a reason to get themselves executed. I think the goon... I think I agree with you. I don't think it's, like, as up there as Butler or Damsel. I think it's somewhere between Barber and Drunk. I'm not sure whether I feel it's A or B, but I think it's below Barber, above Drunk, in my view.
I think I'm just going to put it in B tier. Because I do think that it runs into the difficulty of people having a bit of uncertainty of what to do. And that uncertainty can steal people's agency sometimes. And then the idea of not really being able to choose, like, when you flip or getting flipped late can sometimes be unfun. So I'm gonna rely on the funness quotient a little bit, and I'm gonna put it in B. I think it fits nicely there.
I think the case for moving up to A would be that it's a relatively exceptionally good evil bluff.
It's a great evil bluff.
It's, like, really powerful to bluff. I see goon bluffs work almost all more than anything else. Like, because good players are just terminally attracted to wasting their ability on trying to keep goons good. You can, especially with sailors and innkeepers, you can get them to spend their powerful protective abilities on you instead of, like, an actual good player that might make them do something. Beautiful.
You know what? You've convinced me, actually. I'm going to move it up into A tier behind Barber.
Right, that brings up the Hatter. Now, at first glance, Hatter might seem like Barber. I'm going to make the case that they have no similarities whatsoever from strategic depth, and the Hatter belongs in D tier. The Hatter's ability is exponentially more powerful for the evil team the later in the game the Barber dies, because... The Hatter dies because, like, the ability to know what... The ability to pick what specific contours the evil team is going to take, even if minions are dead and it's just picking demon type, gets stronger the more information evil team has about what will help them win the game the most. On day one, they have the least information. Like, Hatter is just so incentivized to get executed day one, it's crazy.
Unlike Barber, Hatter wants to get executed on day one, and there's not a whole lot of reasons not to kill it. You know, Godfather, it almost wants Godfather on script, like, yeah, with it.
Godfather is, like, the best reason I can think of not to kill a Hatter, because then you get the Godfather kill. But frankly, like, an early Godfather kill is also not the end of the world. Like,
nope.
It's just so incentivized to die immediately. There's obviously like interesting choices the evil team gets to make off the Hatter pick.
Oh yeah.
And maybe we should be thinking about it from that angle. But the character itself, like, you just want to be dead as quickly as possible if you draw the Hatter token, which is sort of boring.
And the problem with it as a bluff for evil is you want to be dead as quickly as possible. Most evil players don't want to be dead as quickly as possible.
Yeah. It's none of the doldrums.
You know, in terms of the strategy of picking new roles, I don't know. Generally, like, if assassin's available, swap the assassin onto a different player. Like, if you've got a role that you think is like if you've got a fallback role like a Scarlet Woman or a Twin or something, you can swap that out with somebody else who's more like less suspicious or something. I mean, I think it's all very straightforward is the problem. Like,
yeah,
and it's all very situational. Like, there's
it's in this game state what is going to helpful. It's not going to be helpful to turn the Vizier into a Scarlet Woman. Generally, it's not going to be helpful.
Yeah.
To switch the demon type from imp to Lord of Typhon. Yeah. Like,
you don't want to go from a quiet to a loud minion, right? That just makes it really evident what you did.
Yeah. All right.
Let's put Hatter in D tier there, where it belongs.
Yeah.
Heretic. You and I have been... You and I have had a lot of conversations about Heretic in the past couple of months. And I think we both think it's an underrated outsider. I think we both think it's more fun than people give it credit for. It just needs good script building to be there. I think strategically it's very interesting because your whole existence creates a change in win condition for both teams. And you have to spend all of your energy finding people to trust. And that is a fascinating game space to be in. You are fully incentivized to just find people that you can trust.
Yeah, I think it's game warping. And I think that makes it super interesting to play as or play with. Obviously, it needs the right support pieces on script. It needs, like, the information for both teams to feel like they have a reasonable shot at solving the win con. But with that in mind, I agree. It's, like, it does a lot of interesting stuff. Like, the Heretic itself, games with Heretics can have problems, but I think the Heretic itself does a lot of interesting things. And how you make use of that interesting things is going to vary depending on the script and what else is in play. There's things you can do with a cannibal or a philosopher or someone else that can duplicate it. There's things you can do with drunkards or poisoners that are interesting. Yeah.
It's great as a bluff for the evil team if it's on script, right? Evil can mess with it and, potentially bluff it and get the good team to be focused on killing their own teammates. There's a ton.
Really solid minion bluff. Not a solid demon bluff, because if the demon's alive in Final 3 and bluffing Heretic, like, the demon has the tricky issue of, why shouldn't I be executed? But it's a great minion bluff.
Yeah, it's S tier for me, like Damsel. Maybe only drop down to A tier because people just don't seem to like it.
I think that's fair. I think putting it in A tier because of the fun issues makes a lot of sense.
Put it in here between Goon and Barber, I think. But I do think it's strategically fascinating, and it just completely changes the game, much like the Damsel does. Maybe the thing that makes it less strategically interesting or less fun is that it changes the game. It warps the game so much to an extreme, whereas the Damsel doesn't quite take over the game in the same way.
Yeah.
I think that's a very fair way to talk about it.
Yeah. All right. Next up, we have the Klutz. The Klutz. The first of our, like, direct you win, you lose outsiders. There's one other that exists, I think.
I guess the damsel bluff. I guess the damsel guess, but
oh, the damsel, yeah. So I guess it's our second of the you win, you lose outsiders. After damsel, which I completely forgot about. And before saint, which I wish I could forget about.
Probably not getting to that one in this episode.
We're not getting to saint in this episode. So I'll save my thoughts. Klutz, I think, is a nice, solid mid-level outsider. I want to just put it in B tier. Like, finding one player to trust and pick is super important. But also, it's not, like, the most difficult thing in most games. In most games, it's not that hard to find one player who you can trust for real. Klutz obviously tends to want to die relatively early, I think, is one of its drawbacks. Like, once to die late enough to have found that player they should trust, and early enough that that player is still alive.
I think something that has occurred to me just now, and I think it's occurred to me before, but the strategically interesting outsiders are outsiders that encourage the player who draws the token to engage with the game. Mm-hmm. Right? Butler needs to engage with the game. They need to find a person who is going to vote the way that they want to. Damsel needs to engage with the game. They need to find players to trust and also try to hide their existence. Goon needs to engage with the game. They need to figure out which side is winning and if they can get back on that side. Heretic has to engage with the game. They're looking for players to trust. They're looking for ways that they can sway the game, prevent the good team from killing the demon too early. Barber, the same way, try to read where the evil team is, try to read where the good team is, right? Yeah. Drunk, maybe a little less so.
Yeah, but I think everything from B tier up is one of these strategically interesting outsiders. I think the ones that aren't super strategically interesting are going to go in C and D.
Yeah. you know, Klutz is advantaged by engaging with the game, by talking to players, by learning their information, right? It's the opposite of what people think when they first engage with the game and they discover the TB outsiders and they go, oh, well, I don't have to do anything. I just sit here. I don't do a lot. I'm just, you know, I'm just this thing that doesn't do stuff.
Right? Not That's to continue not to harp on bad opinions about Butler, but like one of the criticisms you'll get to see is, oh, well, the Butler doesn't do anything. And it's like, what do you mean? Butler's the only TB outsider who does do something. Mm-hmm. What are people talking about? Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, so I think the strategically interesting outsiders are the ones that encourage you to engage with the game, encourage you to actually play and not just sit there and go, well, I don't have a townsfolk role. I'm not gaining information. What's the point of me?
Yeah.
So I think Klutz goes into B tier because of that.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I think it goes into B tier. I don't think it makes it up to the higher tier because I don't think there's that much the Klutz can do except for try to find their one good player and then die once they have while that player's still alive. But I think that's pretty interesting in and of itself.
The other piece of this, of course, is that evil bluffing Klutz is interesting. Right, evil, yeah. Claiming to be the Klutz and picking their demon or picking another evil is always interesting.
Particularly, again, in a Vig game, outsider bluffs are always super interesting in a Vig game. If you can, you can die early and confirm someone. Like, if you have the combination of a Klutz math oracle bluff in a Vig game, so you know that no one's going to be to detect that you're evil, you can just Klutz confirm someone, maybe your other minion.
Yeah.
And then you can start spreading the poison around.
It's pretty strong. Lunatic.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're both going to agree on Lunatic as well in terms of how strategically interesting it is from both the drawing the token perspective and the using it as a bluff perspective.
Well, assuming that you're going to about agree with me that it goes in S tier.
I am.
I think we'll be in full agreement. Yeah, the Lunatic, has so much going for it in terms of strategy. Like, both the strategy of solving that you're the lunatic, the strategy of deciding what to do once you've solved that you're a lunatic, if the demon's following your kills, figuring out that and trying to steer those kills in a way that helps town. Mm-hmm. I think, like, I would emphasize that for lunatics that you shouldn't think of yourself as a budget investigator. I mean, you might be if that's how your ST is meditable, but it's a bummer if your ST is meditable like that. You're probably not a budget investigator. Fingers crossed. you don't learn one minion and one good player among your two fake minions.
What you can do is find a goon.
Yeah, I think goons are more likely to be in your outsider in your fake minions than a real minion, for yep. sure.
And picking a goon is keeping them in the game, which is a lot of fun too. Or keeping them on the good team anyway, which is a lot of fun.
If you find the goon, you not only keep them on the good team, but you deny the demon the information about who the lunatic wants to kill.
Yeah.
Which is very funny.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they might just kill you, but that's also fine because you're the lunatic, right? So it's okay. Also, discovering that you're the lunatic early doesn't break the strategy of the character. The character's great that way. It makes a great bluff that way. Because again, as an evil player, usually as a minion, probably not as the demon, but as an evil player, even as the demon sometimes, as an evil player, you could literally just go like, oh, hey, I figured out that I'm a lunatic. I asked these two people and they said I wasn't their demon. You have the same waking pattern as the demon, potentially, like probably. So it's just, it's a great bluff. It's just such a good role
yeah.
in so many like, ways.
And like, people are so trusting of lunatic claims.
Yep.
You win games you should not by bluffing as lunatic.
I have, 100%. And I know you have too, I've seen it.
Like,
we've done it together, I think.
It's, people trust lunatic claims so much. Like, it's like, oh yeah, I have a demon token. Let's not kill me, I'm just the lunatic. It works a disturbing amount of time, even when all the information points at the demon as being the demon. Lots of choice making that you have as the lunatic.
Yeah, it's a wonderful decision space. It's a fun role to pull. I know so many players who like to pull the lunatic token. It's going in S tier. We both agree. It's a great bluff. It's a great role. There's lots of strategy.
All right. Next up, we have the Moonchild. I actually struggle with thinking about where to put the Moonchild. And here's why I'll tell you. In almost every situation the Moonchild will find themselves in, I think it's less interesting than the Klutz. Except, it's even more devastating if the Moonchild dies in the very late game and picks a good player. Mm-hmm. Then the Klutz thing is, because at least the Klutz like learns they got it wrong immediately, whereas the Moonchild can lose the game for the good team and not get to learn about it for a whole day night cycle, which is just like not fun situation to be in if you have to spend that entire day night cycle wondering if you just lost the game for your team.
It highly advantages Grim Reading. Like, it incredibly advantages Grim Reading. And I think it is an interesting bluff for evil, certainly, but probably not one they want over... I think the weakness of it on BMR is that I don't think it's a bluff that evil wants over Goon or Lunatic most of the time. I think Goon or Lunatic are better bluffs for the evil team. And Moonchild just sort of is living in a weird space where it's sort of... It's less strategically interesting than a lot of other outsiders. It is great when you're the Moonchild and you pick an evil player, but a lot of times evil's going to have bluffs that might keep them alive, or you know they can just point at you as being evil and town doesn't trust you, and there's a lot of layers to it. I actually think this might be our first C-tier outsider.
I would say in like the early game, it's your Moonchild choice just doesn't matter. Either you kill a good player and confirm them, fine. You don't kill an evil player and you learn they're evil, also fine. You pick a good player and the innkeeper protects them, also fine. Like, your choice just doesn't matter that much. You probably don't want to hit the fool, because then that's all ambiguous-like. But if you hit a T-Lady neighbor... T-Lady neighbors and sailors are fine, because you're not taking any thing away from them. It's just the fool that's really an issue. Yeah. In the late game, though, you really need to make sure you're hitting an evil player, because if you hit a good player, you can lose the game. And that's my one pause with, is this C or B? Is that, like, late game need to pick an evil player interesting enough to keep it in B tier?
Let's make a spicy call. I'm going to make another spicy call. I'm going to say I think it goes in C tier. You convinced me to move the last one. I think this one stays.
Okay. Yeah, I'm fine with that. That was just the one thing that gave me pause. Is that late game situation where you have to get an evil player with your Moonchild pick or you lose is super interesting. But every other situation the Moonchild finds themselves in, it just doesn't matter who you pick. You can pick anyone. I don't care. I don't care if you pick a Chambermaid. I don't care if you pick an Unsmen Professor. These are all fine people to kill.
Yep. we're about halfway through the Outsiders, but we haven't gone really that long. Do you want to just keep going?
Well, we're at about, I think, 48-49 minutes of airtime. And we're exactly halfway through the Outsiders. So I think, Milk, the concern is, you know, if we keep going, Outsiders Part 2 is going to be a very truncated episode.
The problem is, I'm not sure there's 50 minutes in Outsiders Part 2, just based on what I'm looking at here. But maybe I'm wrong.
I worry, like, because I don't want us to hit, like, an hour and a half, because I think that's too long for the podcast. And I don't think we'll cover all the Outsiders in, like, I don't even want us to hit, like, 20 more minutes of talk. I think that's too long.
Yeah, we could just.
So I'd rather, like, as we're doing, vamp for like 5 minutes as a going away thing. And then do Outsiders Part 2 with the other 11 Outsiders.
All right, we'll just cut this little bit of conversation and then we'll just kind of do a wrapped up. Then I'll just.
Yeah, we can keep this in. I think, okay. You know, how the sausage is made. Everyone loves the sausage is made content.
All right, they can hear the behind the scenes of us deciding on the fly what the fuck we're doing.
Anyway, what do you all think? Do you think we got stuff wrong? Do you think we got stuff right? I think I am pretty confident in how we've ranked these 11 Outsiders. Looking at them as a whole, I think these all seem right to me.
What do you think the most controversial pick we've made in this episode?
People are gonna yell at us about the Butler being in S tier, and I'm just gonna ignore them. If you want to tell me that we're wrong with the Butler, you can tell me until you're blue in the face. I'm never going to be convinced. The Butler is so strategically fun.
I think people are going to say that we're crazy for putting Heretic in A and S or in A or S tier, like up near the top of the things. I think people are going to think we should have put Heretic way down at the bottom.
Some people are going to say Damsel isn't a fun character and we should have docked it for that. I think Damsel is fun. I think one of Damsel's problems is it's so fun that people overuse it and then it becomes unfun.
Yeah.
But I think it's right where it belongs in a strategy focused one. I think people might be surprised we put Barber so high.
When you leave your comments on this in either the YouTube or over on the Discord, where we are responsive in conversation, by the way, you're welcome to join us on the Discord.
Yeah.
Come and talk to us about this in the podcast channel. I think people are going to have questions for us about Barber and Hatter and how they can be in such different tiers and why we think they're so different and why we have Barber so high and Hatter so low.
Yeah. And, you know, we've only posted Minions Part 1 so far to the YouTube at the time of recording this. Most of the comments we got were like, why isn't Boffin here? And the answer was because when we recorded it before Boffin was released and it will come in Part 2. And we're happy to take comments like that and respond to them. But if you want to give us substantive comments, we'll also respond substantively.
Yeah, you don't have to agree with us. You can disagree with us. We love hearing disagreements.
Yeah. We're happy to defend our positions. Like, we had some minor disagreements here. Like, Milk originally wanted to put Goon in B. I sort of still think Moonchild should be in B.
Maybe.
But we had our disagreements. I wanted Goon in A, Milk wanted Moonchild in C, and we each won one. So I think that's pretty reasonable. Let me think. Oh, and then we'll just close this by how we started it, reminding you that we've decided to do the... Let's think about the positive, kind moments you've had in Clock Tower Games for the Final 3 Con giveaway. Final 3 Con is... I should get these precise dates instead of just not remembering them and saying hand-waving April 2025. It's April 25th to 27th. That's a Friday to Sunday in 2025. It's in McLean Tyson's Corner in the DC area. It's a really good time. It's been a really good time the past 2 years. There's some really fun stuff that's in the works there for Final 3 Con 3.
We're going to do our live show again.
I'm working on a Cheese Thief live game and learn and play session with a few people that I'm really excited about. I know there's going to be some other really fun panels workshops. Yeah, we might do some workshops, who knows. Of course, there'll be games and people, and it'll be fun and wonderful. So grimscenariospodcast@gmail.com. If you toss us an email with a story about a time you remember in Blood on the Clock Tower where another player did something kind for you. Whether it's they realized you didn't know how your bluff worked when you were a new player and they told you how your bluff should work and didn't out it to town, or whether they saw that you were alone in the circle and came up and talked to you. Sometimes some player did something nice for you.
A positive story for us.
Yeah, we want to remember the good times.
And with that, everybody, we thank you. We appreciate y'all. We'll see you next week with probably the second half of this. I imagine we'll just keep doing these for a little while because they're pretty fun. I think are you having fun with these? I'm having fun with these. Yeah.
We're going to get back to our normal things eventually, but these have been a nice change of pace, and it's fun to get them done.
All right, everybody. Until next time, may your scenarios this week stay grim. We'll see you.